Not all of the epic stories in American history are well known. Consider the lives of the first African-American members of Congress. They served during the Reconstruction era, just after the Civil War. Historian Philip Dre tells their stories in a new book, Capital Men. NPR's Tony Cox got the chance to talk to him about his work.
Philip, welcome to News and Notes. It's nice to have you on.
Thanks, Tony.
Let's start with this. Congressman George White from North Carolina ended his term in office in 1901. He was the first to introduce an anti-lynching law, and it got him run out of office. I want to start there because the end of his term marked the end of an era, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's an era that began shortly after the Civil War when Congress, in order to allow the former Confederate states back into the Union, insisted that they hold constitutional conventions, which would make it possible for black men to vote. And so that caused a kind of electoral revolution in the South. You suddenly had blacks not only voting, something that they were very enthusiastic about, but also electing black officials for the first time. So you had the beginning of a series of about 20 black congressmen who came to Washington from the South and served through the end of Reconstruction in the late 1870s, and then, as you mentioned, all the way up to George White, the very end of the century.
Now, you write about the first seven black members of Congress. What did they have in common beside their race? For example, they weren't all former slaves, were they?
The one thing that I think they had in common was that they all were very exceptional people. Some of them had been slaves. Some had been free blacks. What they had in common was a kind of a, you know, sort of ambition to lead and to serve.
Of these early black politicians, who stands out for you and why?
Well, there's several. There's a man named Robert Brown Elliott, who was a congressman from South Carolina. He was a little bit like Barack Obama in a way, in that he was his origins were a little mysterious. He was extremely eloquent and wrote beautiful speeches, and in fact gave a speech on the floor of Congress in 1874, where he kind of really he was confronting the former vice president of the Confederacy in Congress and sort of won the day. And his speech was lauded all over the country, and they even made a beautiful lithograph of it, and he was kind of the toast of the town. And so he was an interesting character. Another one I could mention is Robert Smalls, who they called him the boat thief. He, as a slave, he was working on a Confederate boat, and he managed to steal it and deliver it to the Union Navy, for which he became kind of a hero in the North, and then sort of capitalized on that to become a politician after the war. And he served a very long time from the Sea Islands district of South Carolina and was just hated by the whites of the South. They always called him the boat thief for the rest of his life into the 20th century.
Your book, notwithstanding, history has not been kind, I don't think, to the first black congressmen, many of them being depicted as corrupt or buffoons. We know that that is an inaccurate stereotype, but is there any truth behind that representation at all?
Well, not really. In other words, you have to remember that, of course, the South was very resistant to the idea of Reconstruction, and the black elected officials were, in a certain way, the worst insult to them. The idea that their former chattel would come to occupy positions of authority was very insulting to them. And of course, the press caricatured the black legislators mercilessly. The truth, of course, was different, which was what bothered the whites in the South about the black politicians was not their ignorance, but rather their intelligence, because the blacks took very well, actually, to being politicians. They were fairly adept at it. They came to understand the legislative process and were really quite effective.
Well, to follow that point, how effective was the Reconstruction period, and why was it called the Glorious Failure?
Well, that's in a way a very good term, because it was very idealistic at first, and it was sort of glorious. It was based on a lot of very sort of nice democratic instincts about these new citizens. There were 4 million new citizens after the Civil War, making them equal, making them citizens, giving them the right to vote. There was an effort that the black congressmen were involved in to actually make it so that blacks would enjoy equality in what's called, you know, public accommodations. In other words, riding on a train, seeing a play in a theater, eating in a restaurant. That did not succeed. That was sort of their thrust generally, was to kind of try to use the time they had to broaden the equality and the opportunities, really, for black Americans.
Now, black congressmen presented the case against the Ku Klux Klan. How did they do it, and what impact did it have?
I think it had a lot of impact because one thing the black congressman could do better than any white, however sympathetic, was that the blacks could really speak truth to power. In other words, when they came from, say, South Carolina or North Carolina to Washington to testify in Congress or to speak in Congress, they could say, you know, just 3 days ago, I was stopped on the road by the Klan and they threatened to kill me. And I'm here now by the grace of God. And please, let's pass this Ku Klux Klan Act so we can get some federal help down there. So they really kind of, could testify, could sort of bear witness in a way that no one else could.
You know, you make comparisons in the book between what happened during Reconstruction with the results of the 2000 and 2004 presidential elections a century and a half later. What are they?
After the sort of like over-the-top violence of the Klan seemed to fail, the South turned to a great degree to kind of like ballot box trickery and phrasing of voting laws that were meant to not openly defy the Constitution of the United States, because that would be too much, but rather to make it virtually impossible for black people to vote. There were all kinds of strange tricks like, marking the ballot boxes differently to confuse illiterate voters. There was something called the Understanding Clause, where a registrar could ask an applicant to explain or to understand any paragraph from the state constitution, which, of course, then left it up to the registrar to have total latitude about, oh, well, that answer's not right. So, like, white illiterates or any white voter could be passed, but any black could be turned away. And, of course, these kind of tricks, you know, we see them again. They're happening. You know, even right now, there's something going on out in Ohio where the Republican Party is being kind of crafty about finding ways to basically make it sort of imposing on people to try and come and vote. And so we still see these kind of things going on. They're maybe more sophisticated now, but it's basically the same idea.
Congressman George White from North Carolina ended his term, as we said, in 1901. There was not another congressman, at least from the South, as I understand it, until when, 1970?
It was 1973 when Barbara Jordan and Andrew Young were elected. So, you know, it's funny because George White, he's a wonderful character, and I loved including him in the book. He was the first person to advocate a federal anti-lynching law. And for his trouble, he got attacked by his home state. The white press in North Carolina went after him viciously, and he fought back. He sort of exposed the kind of sexual double standard of, you know, you're complaining, you're making up all these things about sexual assaults on white women. Let's start talking about the actual consensual relations between white women and black men, and also the access that white men seem to want to enjoy with black women, and so on and so on. And this, of course, in the 1890s, this was like beyond insulting. And the campaign to get him out of Congress was intense, so much so that the day he left, the state of North Carolina declared a day of Thanksgiving. And White, of course, had a great sense of self-drama. And on his last day in Congress, he stood up and gave this speech that he called the Negro's Farewell, basically saying, you know, we've enjoyed being here. We've done what we could, and we'd love to stay, but, you know, we'll be back. And this was in 1901. And, of course, it took 72 years for another Southern congressman to set foot on the floor of Congress.
Philip, thank you very much. You did a good job on the book. I appreciate you sharing your time with us.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
That was NPR's Tony Cox talking with historian Philip Dre. He's the author of Capital Men, the epic story of Reconstruction through the lives of the first black congressmen. Dre joined us from our NPR studios in New York.